Back alongside Roger Thompson, I'm Dave Erickson, and today we're talking about some easy-to-follow tips on how to stay cool when racing at the Ironman distance, especially when temperatures are in the mid to upper 90s, possibly triple digits. It's a topic that people should not take lightly, Roger.
Yeah, I think in general we can always look at it. Ironman's going to be a tough race. I mean, it's already tough just in perfect conditions when you're perfectly trained. It's still a tough and long day, and I think sometimes we've seen lately our temperatures rising at times that maybe they shouldn't be, or normally, traditionally, they don't, and then all of a sudden we're faced with this huge hurdle in front of us on top of the race itself. So I think the heat is definitely one. We often have seen the cooler temperatures too, and saying, oh, how do you stay warm? And it almost seems a little easier to stay warm. Mm-hmm. We get freaked out because of the water we get out, it's cold. There could be a wind chill. It might warm up on the bike. But overheating is possibly even more dangerous than just being cold.
Yeah, we could prepare for cold temperatures by bringing more gear, but when it gets hot, you can only take off so much. So one element we're going to talk about is how to keep your core temperature down. And one thing we have here, which we'll be using and we have used in races before, is this is a stealth top. And this is something that you put over your race kit sometimes. And because of the fabric, this is Castelli, you can pour water on it, on your arms, and keep yourself more covered. And by having a wet kit, you're able to stay cooler longer, right?
Yeah, so Castelli came out with this top that was designed primarily for the bike, and it's a wind tunnel tested top primarily, and it was designed, this is actually one that was designed for Kona in 13 by Castelli, and actually I wore this a lot even last year, and I loved it, and that's what I also liked about it. It was white, it was very reflective. And I was also able to pour water on it, which held the water in just a little bit and allowed to keep me a little cooler. So a great top, light in color, really, really lightweight, and tight fitting, which is kind of nice as well.
And you can wear it underneath your wetsuit.
Yeah, and I wore that under my wetsuit. This wouldn't be a top that you'd be able to wear in a non-wetsuit race under a swimskin, because obviously the sleeves extend beyond your shoulder, but it's definitely one. The tops are becoming very, very popular, and people are pulling them off in obviously T2, and then running with their singlet, which would have been under that. But that's just one. You know, having these tops, we're seeing people wear, which I have a pair here. Same deal. It's these are called cooling sleeves. A lot of different companies make them. They're super lightweight. I know some people wear them for arm warmers to take the little bit of the chill off of a spring morning or something, but they're really designed to, again, reflect the heat. They're light in color, and also when you put water on them, they hold on to the water a little bit better, and again, cool the skin. I've worn them multiple times. I can't say I've ever ridden with one on and one off, you know, or this exposed arm, but I definitely enjoy the fact that you can dump water on them. It holds the water, and I definitely don't feel like my arms are getting hot versus wearing, say, a fleece arm warmer.
Now, there's a difference between racing in the heat in Kona, Hawaii, versus maybe a place like Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. You have different air temperature or different type of humidity factors, even though the temperature may be in the upper 90s.
Right.
Explain the difference between the two.
Well, with humidity, and again, not being the weather forecaster than I am, but having raced in both those conditions in excessive in 2003 in Coeur d'Alene, I think we had highs of 93 degrees, you know, general temperature. Obviously, when you're out on the road and you're running on these exposed blacktop areas, it's a lot hotter than that. And at the time in 2003, Coeur d'Alene experienced the highest attrition rate of any Ironman North America in history up to that point. So it was a tough day. I wasn't really going into the race thinking anything about the heat. I just knew it was hot, but you know, I slowed my race down quite a bit on the run. I didn't even plan on running, really. That was my first one. I just needed to get to the finish line, and it worked out okay for me, because I was going a lot slower. But at the same time, now compare that high temperatures in Coeur d'Alene to a race like Hawaii, which you have those same temperatures, 90 plus degrees out on the lava fields, and then now throw in the humidity. Well, the humidity is basically, you know, little moisture balls in the air, so you're basically, it's hot water being thrown at you. And I was sitting in a hot tub the other day, because I was cold, which is kind of weird. And it made me think, it's like, wow, I'm sitting in this hot tub that's at 100 degrees right now. This would be considered, in a way, 100% humidity,
right?
Is I'm sitting in this hot tub.
Yeah.
Now, 100 degrees hot tub and then getting out and standing in 100 degree air temperature is a big difference, you know, when you have that much moisture around you that is constantly, you know, bombarding your body. It's much more of the grizzly bear on your back than it is, say, dry air, which we have more of, you know, in inland.
Yes.
Or in the deserts.
So we're still talking about core temperature. Now, I've seen this, and I've heard of this, and I've even experimented with it, is there are certain parts of your body that are, that react better to cold or ice, certain glands, whether it's in your groin, your armpits, around your neck, or even your palms.
Correct.
So that's a technique that people can use when they're out there on the run specifically, grabbing ice. What are your suggestions on keeping your core temperature down, whether it's the bike and the run?
Well, I would definitely say the swim is an area that obviously it's not much of a concern. If you're someone that generates a lot of body heat quickly and you're swimming in, you know, a full wetsuit and say the water temperature is just on the bubble of being wetsuit legal, like 76 degrees, it hasn't eclipsed the 76.1 for a WTC race. I think 78 for USAT, but for amateurs, it's 76.1 for WTC. And you're someone that generates a lot of heat. You're going to have to be careful because you can get out of the water already experiencing
right.
quite a bit of core temperature rise because of that effort. So, and I know some people that are, you know, they say, well, I'm going to go with a sleeveless mm-hmm. or I'm going to go, you know, they're trying to change things up a little bit just so they don't, but they want it. They want the benefit, obviously, of a wetsuit. Also a disadvantage, you know, is we all have to wear swim caps, mm-hmm. which of course holds in the heat as well.
Yeah.
But going back to your question, getting out of the water, hopefully you're not overheating already. That's the goal. You get on the bike and it might be a cool morning because, well, it's morning, the sun's barely getting up and it's just cooler. But the problem is if you start reacting to, you know, getting hot too late, you're trying to cool down a system that's already heated up. You know, your body, your core temperature, you know, obviously heats from the inside, and then it's shuttling blood to your skin to try to sweat and cool itself. But, you know, once your core temperature gets out of control, you're pretty much out of luck. You know, your car is overheated. It's going to take a long time for it to cool down, especially when you're in extreme heat anyway. So one thing that I do when I race Hawaii or actually any race that I think it's going to be in even in the upper 80s is I go through each aid station on the bike. If I need aid, I'll grab it. The majority of the time I already have my fueling on my bike already. So I will just grab, my goal is to grab 2 bottles of water at each aid station, and each one of those bottles is designed just to simply cool myself. I dump it over my back, I spray it on my, you know, chest, I spray it on my arms and my legs, and if I can get through all that bottle on that first part of that aid station, if I can grab another bottle at the tail end of it, I'll grab that and go through that same cycle again and toss it. If I, you know, I'm way outside of it or the aid station or I want that bottle or I have room on my bike because I've gotten rid of a bottle, and again, we're all a little different with this, I'll take it with me just to cool myself later on in between, because most Ironmans have a 10-mile stretch between each aid station. So maybe, you know, 5 miles into the next aid station, so 5 miles after the aid station, you know, I'll cool myself again.
Mm-hmm.
But keeping yourself cool is so important on the bike. People think, oh, you know, just I'm not going to worry about it, I don't want to get wet. You know, it's just like your body is getting so hot during that, especially in conditions that are, you know, in the upper 90s or Hawaii that are in the 90s and even hundreds on Queen K and very humid. So keeping your core temp cool, because when you hit that run, then it turns into a sauna. Then it turns into, you don't have the wind blowing, you don't have that, you know, cooling effect that you have when you're riding at 15 to 25 miles an hour.
And one more thing with the helmet. In fact, for me, I know in preparation for Ironman Coeur d'Alene, which is going to be triple digits, high 90s, I'm thinking about wearing a more of a road bike helmet versus an aero helmet. That way I can pour the water through the helmet and
keep
my skull cooler.
Yeah, and that's a great strategy too. And a lot of people, you'll see, they won't race in those hot conditions with an aero helmet because there's limited vents.
Yeah.
And especially as we're looking at some of these new helmets coming out, Rudy Project, not just coming out, but have been out, Rudy Project, the Louis Garneau P09, I'm trying to think of some of the other ones that have the facial, kind of the screen on them,
yep.
And then they have limited vents as well, is that with a normal aero helmet, let's take the old Rudy Projects that didn't have the face shield or the screen on it, even though it didn't have a lot of vents potentially, you got a lot of airflow on helmets straight through the face. Like the wind is going in through the mm-hmm. front of the helmet.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big area to allow wind to come through.
Yeah.
Now as we start to close that off halfway down to the cheekbones or whatever, now you're blocking that airflow a lot. So those helmets definitely can get a little warmer than they have in the past. So using your strategy to say, I'm going to use a helmet that, you know, just my normal road helmet that has a lot of vents so I can dump water. I mean, it's a great, I mean, It's very logical and makes sense. Some people don't dump water on their head anyway, you know, just because on the bike, just it's not something that they normally do.
Yeah.
So, and I've ridden with an aero helmet that's been fairly closed in the past and even in Hawaii, and I've never really had the problem with overheating or going, gosh, my head's really hot.
Mm-hmm.
But it definitely makes sense why people don't wear aero helmets in extreme heat conditions.
What's your strategy for keeping your core temperature down on the run when your pace is so much slower? It feels like it's longer. I mean,
right.
I'm talking about a marathon where
right.
some people are lucky to break 3 hours, but more likely we're in the 4.5, 5.5, 6.5 hour range.
Yeah, the run is definitely where you start to really feel the heat really start to just pulse on your face and just like this is, I mean, and you do all the self-talk, you know, you're just like, God, I'm hot. I'm so hot. Oh, it's hot. You know,
yeah.
We do that. And you do it on the bike too. You know, when you're climbing up a long climb and you just feel the heat radiating on and you're just like, I'm dying here, you know? But on the run, it's the same thing. If in extreme heat, we got to throttle things down on the bike as well. You got to slow things down, period. And you got to focus more on heart rate than on the bike. If you use a power meter, you got to really focus on your perceived effort and watching your heart rate drift too high. It's naturally going to be higher because your heart rate's trying to shuttle, you know, blood as fast as it can to the surface to cool it. As it's doing that though, it's also taking blood away from your muscles, which now you're working hard. You know, it's just a horrible cycle to get into. So I think it's similar to like elevation. You're going to elevation, you're going to have to slow things down just a little bit unless you come from elevation
mm-hmm.
In an endurance event. You're running the engine a little hotter than you normally would, so you got to, you can't go at freeway speeds.
So you have we'll get to hydration in a moment, but you have a hydration plan where is it one drink of fluids and then two drinks on your body?
You know, well, going back to the run, because that's what you asked me about, and yeah. I just started talking about other things. But going back to the run, neat thing about WTC events, Ironman events, is that the aid stations are very, very long. I mean, it's basically they're doubled up. You get all your stuff, even on the bike, you get all your stuff, and then it repeats it again. You get all that same stuff again. So when you go through that, yeah, I focus on what do I need?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I need fueling, if I need something that is imperative for my fueling, I make sure I get that. Then secondly, and whether I take it immediately or I store it, I put it in a pocket or shove it in my shorts, whatever it might be, I have it. Then I'm just going 100% for cooling. Everything. I grab everything I possibly can. I mean, everything.
Sponges,
I grab
ice,
sponges,
more water.
Ice, water, grab it again. And at the end, if you're already going, I got everything I needed. And then there's, you know, some kid at the end going, water, I take that too. And, you know, and it's like, and I joke about that. You've heard me say it. I said, I think I'm honestly cleaner at
yeah.
the end of the race than I am at the start because of how much water yeah. I'm pouring on myself.
Yeah.
And yeah, I go ice. I do everything ice. I immediately dump down my shorts. There's really not a lot of places to put ice. You can put it in your top, but often if you have a two-piece, it's going to just roll right on
yeah.
through. There's some other companies out there that are creating ice shelves mm-hmm. for their clothing, which I think is a brilliant idea. But ultimately, ice, you can hold on to it. You can put it under a hat. There's a lot of places you can do it. But if you're just throwing it, you know, you don't throw ice in your face. You don't, you know, it's got it for have any value. It's got to stay somewhere.
Yeah, hanging on to ice in your hands as long
yeah,
as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. You bet. And that works. But unfortunately, if you're grabbing things, holding on to ice, you might want to make sure that's your last
right.
Item you grab.
Let's move on to hydration. Tip number two, staying cool during an Ironman distance race. A body can only absorb so much,
right.
so many fluids before it either starts to build up and you get distended, is that what they call it in your stomach?
Yeah.
Or you can't take it, you might start feeling sick. So what are some of the general guidelines and maybe between the difference between hydration as in terms of water and maybe a supplemental drink?
Right. I think you can, absorb essentially, generally speaking, anywhere from, I don't know, it's like 28 to 35 ounces. And you know, there is some variability with that. Everyone's a little different. But in general, you can only absorb that much. So you can say, well, I'm just going to, you know, keep drinking and drinking and drinking. Well, your body can't absorb it all anyway. And you don't want to drink so much that you go hyponatremic and then you're in really bad shape. You're overhydrated, which is a very dangerous situation. So you gotta balance it. And often people drink in the heat even more fluids than they even require because they're, you know, kind of self-medicating. They're worried. They're overhydrating. But again, it's primarily because we're trying to cool down and we're drinking these things to cool down. But if you cool from the outside and constantly and hopefully keep your radiator, keeping the engine cool, that'll help combat that a bit. So again, I drink a bit of water. All my nutrition I take is liquid anyway.
And that's a big key for hot weather races because Mark Allen had a great article recently, I think it was on Ironman.com, that the hotter you get, the liquid in your stomach is going out to your blood vessels,
right,
and going out to your extremities and not so much breaking out any food,
right,
or hard substances that are inside your stomach. So
right,
if you can go liquid nutrition, that's the best bet in warm weather races.
You just think about it. I mean, think about running a marathon and eating, I don't know, eating candy bars, eating a Snickers bar, a Fig Newton, a Subway sandwich. I'm throwing out all this stuff that most of you would probably go, oh, that sounds disgusting. Because your body knows what it wants. And at that point, it can't, in the heat like that, it can't digest that. I mean, you don't know why, your body's telling you why. It's going, no, don't eat that. Don't eat the, you know, roll. You know, don't eat the, peanut butter and jelly sandwich. In other conditions, you know, it's cold out, you're on a ski mountain or cross-country skiing, and it's like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich sounds delicious right now. You know, so there's times in your body does a really good job at kind of managing that. And I think we've talked about that before when you're going by an aid station on the run and going, well, here's my nutrition. I'm taking one gel every blah, 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 and I'm drinking this and I'm, you know, and it's like, but boy, those cookies look really good. Grab the cookies. You know, your body's telling you what it needs. Well, I'm going to stick to my nutrition plan that says I only take gels. It's like your body's done with gels right now. It's had enough gels.
I don't want to see a gel or a banana after the race.
Yeah, and that's how it is. Yeah, after the race, I can't wait. I'm going to get this giant, you know, syrup cone. You know,
no,
it's
thanks.
Like, no thanks. That's just pure sugar and you've had enough of that. But going back to that is like, I take nutrition primarily in the liquid form that helps balance that so I don't have to think about how many calories I'm taking.
Yeah.
It's already in my liquid, and then through the aid stations as I'm cooling myself on the bike, I'm also taking a hit or two of water, you know, drinking, supplementing what I already have on my bike.
I spoke with someone today by text, and we were talking about the warm weather of races, and she had done Louisville recently, or had done Louisville in the past,
right,
and said, you know, she was trying to accomplish 2 bottles per hour on the bike, but she also said she used a Timex watch, for example, and had a timer set for every 10 or 15 minutes to remind her
to drink.
It's time to drink because you can get going and you forget.
And it's often when that happens, it happens out of T1. It's the first hour and a half of the bike when you're out there and you're just blitzing along because you have the calories stored and you're like, yeah, I feel so great, you know, and all of a sudden you look down like in her situation went, you know, I want to get 2 bottles in, by the way, per hour. That's crazy. To me, that's a ton of fluids.
Depends on if it's a 16-ounce bottle.
Right, right. I'm just going normal size bottles. That's a lot of fluids. But anyway, everyone's different. And then all of a sudden you look down and you're at the end of an hour and a half and you've taken 2 sips. It's like you can't go back and go, okay, I'm just going to chug these bottles and that way my body will, you know, absorb it. Your body's just going to slough it off. It can only take in, I think it's like, what is it, 8 ounces at the most? 4 to 8 ounces absorb the rest of it. It'll just kick out going, we can't even absorb it right now. So it just gets passed and you pee it out. So that's why, you know, when you go to the drinking fountain and you know, you haven't drank all day and you go, oh, I'm going to just sit here and you sit there and you drink on the drinking fountain and you drink 2 gallons of water, which you can't do either, but you drink a gallon of water. It's like, oh, good. I'm back better. It's like,
we're
no,
not camels.
You're not. Yeah, exactly. You're not a camel and your poor kidneys are going, what the hell is going on? But, Yeah, so you just end up peeing it out. So that's why my solution to the problem is to run an IV.
Rolling
in
IV?
No. You put it in a camelback. Okay. You have a port. You go to once you hit, you know, your special needs on the bike, you take off that. You take off the IV bag, put on a new one, off you go. Can you imagine doing Ironman in, I don't know, 100 degree heat, no water bottles on your bike? Granted, you can't have an IV bag with that much fluids probably, but...
Let's finish this up with the third element, which is not necessarily available to everybody, but it's something someone might want to try, and that is being aware of your salt loss or your sodium needs.
Right.
And something that we did in March of this year, there was a certain kind of test you could do. Kind of explain what that test was.
Well, basically, we had Alan Lim from Scratch Labs come to Timex Camp and use this little device that essentially put this little chemical on our arm. I know that sounds horrible. And then he put this little patch on that basically made your body react and sweat at 100% of what your body can possibly sweat. I mean, it's just maxed it out in that little tiny spot. I'd imagine spraying your whole body with it wouldn't be a good idea, but great for weight loss, though. But for this little spot. So you walked around, and once it had been a certain amount of time, and this little thing popped, kind of like a little turkey or something.
The bottle
cap size. Yeah, it was just on your forearm. He took that, and he analyzed it, and basically came up with a number that basically suggested how much sodium you will lose on the sweatiest day of racing you could possibly do. Now, everyone was different. You had people that had these crazy, crazy high numbers. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to throw out these numbers. I'm not going to talk about what they mean. Okay. But some people would be as high as 2,000 or darn near 2,000 down to as low as 350. So the 350 means that on your sweatiest day, you're not losing that much sodium. You're not a salty sweater. And then you had the 2,000. It's like, good luck. Yeah. You know, when you sweat, you need to be, you know, basically ingesting a fair amount of sodium as well, because you're a very salty sweater. And we see those people all the time. You see them in an Ironman, you know, they just, you know, every time they finish a ride, they've got, you know, white on the helmet straps and on their shorts and stuff like that. Hawaii is a horrible example because you get out of the water, you have salt on your, from the salt water. So we often mistake that as a salty person, but anyway, or a salty sweater. So so going back to what we learned from Alan Lim from Scratch Labs is that it gave us an idea of how we can supplement, or do we need to supplement. I was one of the lowest, I think, in terms of salt content. Mm-hmm. I was like at 500, which means it's like you can kind of pretty much just eat whatever you need to eat. You're not going to need to supplement with too much of anything. Versus, again, someone that's at like 1,900, it's like, you go into hot conditions of 100 degrees or highly humid in 90 some odd degrees, you need to factor that in.
And you can use these numbers to determine how much sodium is needed in your sports drinks or your foods that you're taking in.
Right.
Or if you need salt tablets.
And everything, everything you can experiment with on race day. And that's the thing, is this isn't something that you go, oh yeah, I remember my number, I guess I'll take a bunch of salt. I mean, it's like, you got to do this in
training.
So
what's the danger of taking too much?
I think you end up, supposedly, I've heard two, I wish I had the answer to that. I was told by one person, a physician, that your body is just going to kick it out. Mm-hmm. Another person said you're going to screw up your electrolyte balance and could potentially take in too much, which is going to, now you're going to take in a bunch of water and you're going to have this massive swelling, which turns into hyponatremia as well. Mm-hmm. So, I think taking too much of anything, I think supplementing what you already have is a good idea. You know, trying to, of course, like every triathlete, if it a little is good, then a lot must be a lot better. I think that should be really avoided. I think most capsules, or most, if you're taking a capsule, it actually says take, you know, 1 to 4 every hour, you know, type thing, and hot and whatever. And it's like, that's a rough gauge. So you can kind of say, well, if I'm a light salt sweater, you know, I'll take one if I'm, and I feel like I need to. Or if I'm heavy, I can take as many as 4.
But generally speaking, the nutrition that might be on course,
right,
or what you might find in your sports bottle, usually has a good balance in between there, right?
And the hydration normally does. Often your nutrition in terms of food, like your calories, typically is just a majority of it's sugar. So there's not a lot of sodium in that, but your electrolyte drinks typically do, like Gatorade, whatever is being used, but Gatorade, I know Power Bar Endurance, I know they have a sodium balance in them to help with that.
Okay. So good. Three somewhat easy to follow tips, or at least some framework, keeping your core temperature down.
Get number one.
Hydrating throughout the race.
Okay, number one.
Number one, and sodium loss.
Yeah, number one.
Stay ahead of that.
They're all number one.
Yeah.
But I know if you haven't done it already and you're in the final throes of the race here, that's not the time to make the changes. I think like most people do, they go out and they go for a long run or a long ride. They weigh themselves before and weigh themselves after, calculate in how much they drank and how far behind. It's not rocket science, but it gives you an idea of like, wow, I went for a 2-hour run, I drank this much fluid, which I considered a lot, and I lost 3 pounds. It's like, good golly, that wasn't even a hard run, it wasn't even that hot. It gives you an idea of what your body's going through. If you stop on the run to pee a bunch, you probably should factor that in too.
I don't know if this is healthy or not, but I've done that system where you've weighed myself before a long run, and I've lost as much as 4 to 5 pounds of fluids based on that one run. And that was scary to think. I just dropped 5 pounds, great. But that was only because of a run, and it was hot outside.
And that's 100% fluids.
Yeah.
That's 100%, well, I shouldn't say 100, about 95% fluids. Very little, obviously you'd have to, 3,600 calories is roughly a pound, but it doesn't really work like that. But yeah, what you lose by doing that is primarily water weight. So you lose 2% roughly of your weight in fluids, meaning if you're 100 pounds and you go down to 98 and it's all water weight, your performance after that pretty much starts to suffer. And it's massive. So you got to be careful.
All right. Hope you learned something from those tips. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time.
Don't let me hear you say life's taking you nowhere.
Angel.
Come, baby. Look at that sky. Life's begun. Nights are warm and the days are young.